We have Acting Boardman, the mayor of the best municipality in the Eastern Cape, even though he doesn't want to wear the t-shirt. You know it's true.
Where is Gocha?
So with 9 towns, Jeffreys Bay is the obvious main one, St. Francis Bay and Humanthorpe, and then 6 other small towns, Oyster Bay, Hankey, Potensi, Thornhill, Lurie, those places.
Tell us about your plastic road, and is it still there?
It's still there without a bottle.
Without!
What do you like about your job?
That's easy. I love that not one single day is the same. I obviously love people. People give me energy. And I like solving the problems.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the DA podcast. I am Gabelo.
I'm Donovan.
Nazli Sharif.
And today we are joined by the mayor of, is it Gocha or Gocha?
Gocha.
We are with Hatting Boardman, the mayor of Gocha.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's wonderful to be here. So, I've heard much about the studio and everything that goes on.
Are you an avid viewer?
I do view, not all the time, but I do. I've some competitiveness in me, so I've watched Peter's, and I just maybe should get this off my back early in this podcast. I do want to just say that I have more hair than Peter.
Wow.
That's a good way to start.
Healthy competition is always good.
Absolutely.
Always good. And especially in the DA, you know, when we have mayors, it's always good to compete with one another because you're competing with excellence.
There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us. Where is Gocha?
Yeah, please.
This was the first thing I had to look up when I found out we were talking to you. It's like, oh, there's a municipality by that name.
Yes. Yeah, so Gocha, you will definitely know where it is when I say Jeffreys Bay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's, I actually had an interesting conversation with Tim Harris the other day, and he said that they did research and obviously Cape Town and Table Mountain, in terms of place brands, is one of the most famous place brands. Everybody knows where that is and knows that in South Africa. Mm. Well, globally, that's a well-known name, place name. Stellenbosch, if anybody that knows anything about wine, Stellenbosch. And then thirdly is the Kruger National Park, which obviously is also. And then fourthly in that list of most recognized place names in South Africa internationally is Jeffreys Bay because of the surfing brand that we have there, which is really cool. So with 9 towns, Jeffreys Bay is the obvious main one, but we've got St. Francis and Humanthorpe, St. Francis Bay and Humanthorpe, and then 6 other small towns, Oyster Bay. Hankey, Potensi, Thornhill, Lurie, and those places.
Okay, so every single mayor who has been on this platform will say that their municipality is the absolute best.
Of course.
I'm giving you
a timed, to Gocha yet.
Yes, 30 seconds. Give me your elevator pitch for why Gocha is the best. I won't even ask you if it is, because I know you're going to say it is.
It is.
What's your elevator pitch?
It's the lifestyle. Lifestyle. It's so chilled. It's a beautiful. The people are amazing. You've got ocean, you've got mountains, you've got leisure, so much leisure. You've got fishing, you've got off-roading, you've got a bit of everything. It's close to the airport in Nelson Mandela Bay. It's on the garden route. It's just the perfect weather. Might get a bit windy from time to time. We've got about 200 wind turbines in our area, which tells you something about the wind. But there's so much to do, and it's such an amazing lifestyle to have and such a privilege to live
there. That sounds amazing. Mm. And then just from a governance perspective, how big is it? What's your budget? Mm. What are you looking at?
We've got a 1.7 billion budget. It's very small compared to Cape Town, obviously. We've got 120... it depends who you listen to. Between 120,000 and 140,000 people. Most of them in Jeffreys Bay and Humanthorpe. Okay. That's the majority, the two bigger towns population-wise. And we've got a council of only 30 seats, which is similar to Midvaal and Mossel Bay and Saldanha and those guys. And then, DA's got the outright majority, which is wonderful. No coalition discussions and all of those things.
Lucky so you.
That's a real privilege. So we're working hard to keep it that way.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. But Hatte, I want to know, you look young.
to me.
I look young, yes.
Yeah, you look young. I'm not going to cast aspersions on how old are you. But why did you decide to go into politics?
That's a long story. I'll try and keep it shortish. Because I didn't know anything about politics before I actually went into politics. And I had no clue. I was in India and working there with an organization that did humanitarian work all over the world. And I was actually working in this orphanage with about 300 kids there. And it was really amazing. But I realized the way that the Indian government system works is that if you're poor, you were born poor, you will always be poor. There's just this belief in religion so embedded into their government system that I was frustrated with the way that I know these kids all have so much potential and really want to be more and achieve something in life, but they probably won't. And it really saddened me a lot. And I realized that if somebody in government in India doesn't really start standing up for this and make very deliberate changes, then it's not going to happen. And I realized then that there's a lot of things that's similar in South Africa. And if we really need solid people in government, if we want to see real change in South Africa. And for the first time then, I have a teaching background and I was a typical ignorant young guy. I didn't know anything. I was
we like to say naive, idealistic.
Yes.
Kind words.
Yes, okay, thank you. So this thought never left me. So I just I was still traveling for a whole year all over the world, and when I eventually got back to South Africa, I just felt like I really need to be involved somewhere, and I didn't know anybody. I don't know where to start, but all I remember was I grew up in Humansdorp. So when I was still very small, the guy who lived across the road from us, he used to be the mayor of Humansdorp.
Wow.
And that was 20, 30 years ago. And I, definitely 30 years ago. And I actually went to him. He had his own business at the stage and at the time, and went to him and said, listen, I feel like I need to get involved in politics. Where do I go? And we sort of had a real discussion over where South Africa is and how to get out of where we were at that time. And he said, well, the DA office is just across the road from my office, and just go there. Why don't you just go now? And we obviously spoke about the different parties and all of the rest of it. And it was just very clear. I walked across the road, signed up membership, and
Bob's your uncle.
And the rest is history.
And then I actually started working. Sorry, I'm making a very long story.
No, please, don't mind.
You can ask another question at the end. Then I started actually working as a staff member for the day.
Oh, okay.
I worked as a staff member for about 5 years until 2016 when I became a counselor.
And I think so, it's obviously clear you're not from a family that were in politics. Maybe talk to me about your upbringing. How was that for you?
Yeah, I grew up in Humansdorp, and obviously a small town. Both my parents are teachers, and it wasn't by force, but I sort of, that was my back. That's what I saw, and really do have a love for education. I did go to study teaching and taught for a few years, and very, very quickly learned that I'm not a teacher.
It's not for you.
It's definitely not for me. Politics is easier than teaching. then eventually quit that and to start working for this NGO. And
what about your upbringing?
Oh, sorry, yes.
Do you think sort of helped you to make that decision to actually go into politics? Because, I mean, I can imagine it's quite a change of career, of going from teaching to, I would say, teaching to babysitting, but from teaching to being in politics. I mean, you know, what in your upbringing actually helped you with that decision?
Yeah, I think my parents, my dad died when I was still young. I was in high school, but very young, still 15 years old. And both my parents really care about people. They really care about people. And I think I grew up in a home where people were people. It's race or culture or anything language or anything. It was never an issue. It was never something that ever was an issue. I mean, we didn't even people were people, and they need to be cared for, whoever they are, wherever they're from. And I think that was something that I've just sort of became. I really do care about the people of Koch. I really do care about people having a better life. I really do care, and I feel it's a calling or that I needed to pursue. And so I think that caring background and wanting to help people, wanting to educate, wanting to be part of a upliftment of people, I think is what gives me energy.
Yeah, it comes out, especially when you explain your motivations for it. Mm. And now, Hatting, do you have any kids? What's family life like now?
Yeah, I do. I am really very privileged to have a beautiful wife and three boys.
Amazing.
11, 8, and 6. And
note how he said beautiful wife.
Yes, my wife told me to say that.
By the way, his wife.
Can I please send you to give lessons to my husband?
Let's just tell him nicely.
Okay, so take us on the whirlwind tour. So from Black Sheep, who left the family business, to mayor. You went to the DA office, you were a staff member for 5 years, and then?
Yeah. Oh, that's such a cool story. I met some unbelievable people. It's really, really cool, especially for me, not knowing anything, coming from education and a whole different world. Politics was really, really something else. And I just came when the DA in Koch just lost the 2011 election by around about 400 votes, which was tremendously. We were stuck with this ANC government for another 5 years by after coming so close. So then I met Elsa van Lingen. I don't know if you know who she is. She used to be a member of parliament at the time. She was our constituency leader. Also later in 2016 became our mayor. Amazing woman and really loved working for her as our constituency leader. I was just a comm and a constituency operations manager. And learned so much. Later became a provincial like a area manager in the in the province.
Okay.
And I learned a lot that time, and then 2016 became a councillor, and when we first won the election in Koch as the DA, and that was wonderful but terrible. I realized, oh, this is being a ward councillor. You know what being a ward councillor is.
Dealing with people.
It's people are moaning about the tree growing over the wall. And now, what must I do? I want to help people, but,
I have a question.
Yes.
Who is worse, school kids or your constituents?
Still school kids.
Still school kids.
That's a good answer. That's
not getting away.
Yeah, so anyway, so I was just, it was just not what I thought. I thought, we're in government. We're going to change things. And here, I'm a ward councillor. I'm not part of the sort of things that were the decision-making, the day-to-day decision-making, which is what I really was looking forward to. And then after, I think it was after 4, 5, 6 months into the job, Elsa then, as mayor, called me in and said she wants me to be on the mayoral committee. She was making a change on the mayoral committee. And then I thought, this is really amazing. Now we're part of deciding what, and I'm part of that inner circle deciding where we're going to want to go as a municipality.
Making change with your hands.
Yes, that was so exciting. And I learned so much in such a short time. I was a mayoral committee member then.
For which portfolio?
At that stage, corporate service.
Okay.
Suits you.
Yeah. It was also a learning curve for me. It was a big learning curve for me, but it was an easy fit, yes. Mm. And then, unfortunately, she passed away in 2018.
Oh, I'm so
and,
sorry.
And then I became the speaker, and the speaker became the mayor. I became the speaker, which was wonderful. I was the speaker for about 5 years.
Wow.
And then made a change then in the beginning of this term, 2021, became the deputy mayor. And then when Horatio Hendricks, our previous mayor, when he went to the legislature, provincial in the province in the Eastern Cape, and then I moved up to mayor. So it's been 3.5 years now. Yeah. No, two and a half, almost 3 years. Yeah.
Oh my! What a journey!
What a journey indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, you've obviously you've been right from the start in 2016. You've been part of the leadership in Kouga Municipality. I wanted to ask you around, you know, stepping into that municipality for the first time, what did you discover as a new government?
That was insane. I mean, it's 9 years.
Yeah.
And I promise you, we still discover things after 9 years. I sit there and I think, just when I think we've seen it all, then something comes out. I'll tell you now what we discovered the other day. But what we discovered was just a completely broken municipality. It was, you can't believe, and that's why it's so sad that we couldn't win it in 2011. Because 400 votes, only 400 votes kept us out in 2011.
Wow.
Which meant at that stage that we had to suffer through 5 more years of absolute looting. And in that 5 years, I think there were 4 or 5 or 6 mayors during that time of the ANC. And it was just chaos.
400 votes.
Yes. Sure.
You know, whenever I hear such small margins, it makes me want to tell, this is why every single vote counts.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Every single vote counts. 400 votes was the difference between looting and on the brink of collapse to a well-run government.
Yeah,
sure.
And what makes it even sadder is we could have had a lot better start than we had in 2016. Mm.
Yeah.
It could have happened a lot quicker. We would have been a lot further now. So many things. But we discovered that only 4% of our fleet was working. And we've got about just over 200 vehicles. It's not massive. Mm. Again, compared to Cape Town, it's very, very small. But still, 4%
of... What do you
mean 4? 4%, like 4% of...
That's like
about
16 cars out of 200.
To serve, to do everything that a municipality needs to do in 9 towns. 9 towns that are about 15 to 20 to 30 kilometers apart.
Sure.
So a bucky would be filled with people and asphalt and bricks and spades and everything and people. They would drive here, offload people and...
Asphalt and
everything. Drive back to the stores, pick up other people, go clean there, come back, go pick up more people, go do that there, come back, go fix a pipe there, go back, okay, go pick up these guys, because you can't wait till 4 or 5 o'clock when they need to stop working. You need to start picking
driving
up early because
otherwise
you need to get everybody
at home late.
So it's just you cannot run a municipality like that.
But why was that the case?
No one cared. A car would drive into our workshop to fix a spark plug. And it would stand there for 2 years and rust so that it cannot drive again.
Shocking.
It was really insane. So that was the first big thing that we had fleet meetings every single day just to get our fleet up and running. Today, obviously, it's wonderful. We've got over 230 vehicles now, and 97% of those cars are driving every single day on the road, fixing, delivering services. So that's one of the things. The other day, something that I might want to tell you. The other day, somebody came to me and said, "Listen, they bought this piece of land 15 years ago when the ANC was in government. They have now built a school there. They have developed, they've gone bigger and bigger, but now they still can't get their title deed, the papers from the municipality. They still haven't received it." I started digging, asking, this can't be, it's ridiculous. How can they not? Yeah. I mean, they've submitted plans and all of these things. Yeah. How can you do that without proof that you are the owner?
Yeah.
And when we started digging, we found out that that was never our land
to give
or sell.
Oh, my word.
This is what happened under the ANC government. So these people built a whole school there, which does a wonderful job in our community. But it's...
Is this on private land?
It's on provincial land. It turned out to be on provincial land. The provincial government land, the Department of Public Works, they didn't even know about it. So now we have to go to the Department of Public Works. Luckily, it wasn't private land. but so this land was sold. We don't know where the money went to.
Where's the money?
We don't know.
Where's the money?
The person who was there has passed away already. So who knows?
That is insane.
Now there's so many processes to try and fix, and it's just when I think, okay, I've heard it all, then stuff still comes out like that.
That's just astonishes
me. And so that just gives you an example of the kind of mess that we inherited there. I mean, it's everything from small things like just fixing small things that's broken to these massive just corruption. It's just so terrible.
Yeah, because I think the good news I saw recently is that you got your first clean audit, if I'm not mistaken. But what I did reflect on is the fact that it took, 9 years? just to fix what happened in a 5-year term.
Yeah.
And I think it is important for people to think about, as we go into the next elections, right, you're going to have, hopefully, Joburg, Ekurhuleni, Tshwane, hopefully back led by the DA. But the notion that the damage we do today can be undone like that, it's just not true. Yeah. But also, what did you have to do to rebuild? What was the 9-year process that finally got you to a clean audit?
Yeah, so obviously, with all the looting going on, no infrastructure was being maintained or upgraded at all. So we've got a massive backlog of road infrastructure, sewage infrastructure, water infrastructure, just the actual plant and pump stations and all these things. Never mind the actual pipes that's underground. We had so many water breaks and so forth and so forth. So the dilapidated infrastructure is by far the biggest struggle that we still have. We inherited about the 500 million rand road infrastructure backlog. That's just roads alone.
Sure.
And we've now prioritized, about 2 years ago, we prioritized roads as one of our main key priorities. If we don't, because I'm very sad to say that our roads are not great yet.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like here when you drive, you don't see potholes.
No potholes.
We unfortunately still have potholes, but we have 2 years ago decided that we have to do, if we don't fix a big amount of road in roads in a small amount of time, our roads will deteriorate so fast that we won't be able to catch up.
Okay.
So we actually, and we don't have money because we only paid off the last of the ANC debt about a year ago.
So
we don't have money, but what we do have is we have stable finances. We've managed to create stability in our finances. It's clean. We spend our money where it's supposed to go. So the banks are actually willing to lend us money. Even though it's not a revenue-generating infrastructure, we have money to now build roads. Yeah. So we went to DBSA, Development Bank of South Africa, and they actually loaned us 200 million rand. So we are now going to upgrade 71% of our surface road infrastructure in one go, That's amazing. Year and a half. And maybe I can brag with Peter. Peter's got 11 clean audits. But I don't think there's any municipality in the country that can say they have resurfaced 70% of their road infrastructure in one go.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm really proud of. And really, the reason for it is because of the economic impact that it has. It just creates such a feel in a town when you've got proper roads, and you'll know what I mean. Whereas if you drive into town and it's full of potholes, it looks like, oh, there's nothing going on here. But now people will come back and say, wow, I can actually see something. Yeah. I want to come back. I want to come spend more time on holiday here. I want to spend, let's extend our holiday a little bit. And let's spend a little bit more money. Then our businesses can grow. Maybe I can employ one or two people that was unemployed. Now have a job, have an opportunity for a better life.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to do, just because we're connecting people to opportunities and that the actual physical road, but also from a financial, economic point of view.
You know what? I appreciate so much when you started your answer, you were so honest with us and you said the roads are not good in Coga. And I appreciate that honesty because we don't get that often from mayors or politicians because everything is good on my side of the place. But I appreciate your honesty. And to hear that you're going to fix the road 71% is incredible. And I will love to come to Coga and come on holiday. Only, is the beach warm or is the beach cold?
It's much warmer than here.
For you.
Much warmer.
It's much warmer.
That That's all that I need to know.
We can take you for surfing lessons.
Surfing
That's
lessons.
A good idea.
Yeah, we can do that. Kevin, you're going to come with me?
I am not doing surfing because I can't swim.
Oh, we'll get you a boat. Yes. We'll get you a boat.
Oh, they've got boats.
Yes, with an engine.
So I think I saw in passing that you had an oversight with our Deputy Minister for Water and Sanitation around, and you spoke about the water struggles that you've been having. I'm from Joburg. And everybody on this podcast knows every opportunity I have to speak about water, I will take it and speak about water because it affects us every single day. Mm. And having water is a human right. So what are you doing to look at how do you curb the issues around water?
That's such a relevant question for me because we just came about 2 years ago, we came out of a 7-year drought.
Mm. Wow.
Our dam levels were at 4%. And because of a lot of money we spent on infrastructure, we were able to keep our taps from running dry. So there was not a single day where we had to say it's now day zero has now arrived. Yeah. We have to do water shedding or something, anything like that. So we were able to stop that even with 4% water in our dams. We used to be about 70% dependent on dam water and only 30% of our own resource, underground water and so forth. During the drought, we spent about 250 million rand on creating and finding new sources of water, upgrading our water purification plants so that with new packaging plants so that water can be groundwater, borehole water can be purified using fountain water and so on. And within a few years, we completely flipped that around where we're now only 30% dependent on dam water and 70% on underground water and alternative water. And that's something that I'm really proud of. Whereas if you just drive down the road from us in Grahamstown, Makanda, they've got full dams but dry taps.
Sure.
And it's just such a good example of how good governance can really keep your taps dry, flowing.
Yeah.
If you have good governance, and the opposite when you just don't.
That's incredible.
Do it.
Absolutely.
There's no reason why taps should run dry. The technology that's out there nowadays, the money that is out there from national government, because a lot of the money that we did get was grant money, and we're really thankful for that. But we still needed to spend it. We still needed to have the plans and take it through all the processes and make sure that it is actually spent where it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
And so I'm really passionate about proper water. Our dam levels were at 100% a while ago. It's now dropped to about 60% again. So it is dropping fast. But but luckily we're not as dependent on our dam levels anymore.
Yeah, I think it's such an important point for Koha because you've had to declare three disasters, emergency disasters. The drought was one. There was one with the fire, and then now recently in 2024, the foot and mouth disease as well.
Yeah.
It's an indication of, for me as a counselor, I think it's always an indication of two things. One, the lack of investment in that particular resource, and second of all, obviously the ability to respond to that disease as well, to that outbreak as well. Talk to me about why those three disasters, declaring those were so important for you as a municipality, but also making sure that you actually can then respond to those, the drought being one of them, I think, in the future.
Yeah, it's important because it's as if a switch goes on and now people think, whoa, something terrible must be happening there. Yeah. We need to get our act together and get people there, get resources there. We had people from the city of Cape Town advising us at some stage about the water, what we should do when day zero hits and all of those things in our preparations and learning from what you did here. And it's amazing to then just see people all of a sudden waking up and saying, okay, we need to intervene here because it's not gonna turn out well if we don't. So obviously the big spin-off of that or the big assistance with that is financial resources. And that helps a lot. It means that then we can get stuff done quicker. It's easier to get stuff through processes. There's a little bit less of the red tape that we usually face in local government. That is what makes me lose my hair. Because it takes forever to get stuff done.
You should implement a stupid rule button. The city has one.
Yes, that is absolutely.
What is that?
So there's a at the start of the 2021 term, Jordan implemented a stupid rule button. So any official, if they think that this process is really stupid and they can bypass it without breaking the law, they can actually submit it as a stupid rule and we'll remove it.
That's cool.
Like this big button.
I absolutely love that.
That's amazing. That's amazing. We need that.
Sorry, foot and mouth disaster. Is Gocha a big farming?
Massive, yes. So we've got three big industries. Obviously, tourism industry is really big, and with this, around the surfing. People always come for surfing, and we're now trying to push them. They come to Jeffreys Bay for surf, but they need to go to St. Francis to see the beauty and the lifestyle there. But they need to go to the Bavians Kloof and see the beautiful mountains and all of that we have here. So that's such a big industry for us. And then we've got dairy. Dairy industry is very big for us. A third of the country's milk is produced in Gocha municipality. Wow.
Thank you, Gocha, for my lactose intolerance. Now we know who to blame.
It's the DA.
We've got a lot of dairy. A big dairy farming community. They really do a lot for our community. And then we've got a big citrus industry. In the Ganges Valley. A lot of citrus there, and then obviously the fishing industry is big for us, especially calamari, squid, and choka.
In addition to farming prowess, I hear you have some sporting prowess as well. Any big names you want to throw out at us?
Yes, from our area, and I'm not sure if people know who it is.
Tell us.
No, obviously it's wonderful to have a Springbok from Humansdorp, and I'm from Humansdorp, so I'm really proud. Really proud to have Mani Lebok is from Humansdorp.
Yes, it's we all really know cool. Who Mani Lebok is.
So some people are definitely going to be wondering, and just to be clear, until about 10 minutes ago, Nazli did not know who that was.
I did not.
Mr. Mayor.
Also, Selwyn Davids, which is the Blitzbok captain, is also from Selwyn Davids. He's from Jeffreys Bay.
I was making the eyes because now you caught me.
Yes, that's why.
So it's clearly in the water then.
Yes, it's in the water.
Or in the mock.
Touché. That's so cool because, you know, they always say that the Eastern Cape is where legends come from, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that you just adding to that.
Yes, we really, and it's amazing to the emphasis that somebody like Marnie the ball coming from our area has placed on specifically rugby. Let's put rugby. The amount of club rugby that has exploded in our area is just unbelievable. Sure. We used to have one club in Humansdorp that played in the top division in the province. They've now last year won the top division in the province for the first time. And this year we've got three teams playing the top division club rugby in the province. And it's really.
You seem very proud.
I am very proud.
Do you like sports? Do you play some sports?
I'm a sports fanatic. All sports. I love. I love golf. I haven't played a lot. I've played three times this year.
Is this a real sport? How are we defining sport?
You want our podcast to be banned?
Is this a real sport?
Okay, let me tell you some other sports. Wow. I feel insulted.
I said what I said.
You do seem like an opening batsman in cricket.
I love cricket. We've got some indoor action cricket.
Love it.
In Jeffreys Bay, which is wonderful. I love surfing. I don't surf as much as I want to, but I love surfing. I run a bit. I ran the Two Oceans earlier year in Cape Town.
Running for fun.
It's the only way. If I don't enter for something, it's very hard to actually trains for me.
Yeah, so that's what I don't get.
If I don't get that part,
running for fun.
Yeah, running I don't consider maybe a sport. It's just, you just run.
Oh, gosh. You're going to be cancelled after today. There's too many summers running here.
No offense.
So, Maya, you've got a 1.7, 1.8 billion rand budget. Mm-hmm. I took some time to read through the budget, and I was quite impressed, actually, because something that popped out quite off, obviously for me was the term upgrade. Mm. Upgrading, investing. Mm. This is a DA-led municipality that comes from an ANC, time. You've obviously done a lot of good work now, and we can, I think, attest to that with the clean audit. But, talk to us about what are some of the projects that you are very proud of as a mayor that you are now spearheading in that municipality.
Yeah, like I said, when I started as mayor, I identified four, and we've now got five or six sort of key focus areas that I wanted to really make an impact in terms of our infrastructure and making us development ready. Because it's very nice to say that come and develop here, but we then you don't have the infrastructure to carry the capacity for our infrastructure to carry the development. So we need to build that capacity. And we've done really amazing work. Our teams, we've got amazing teams and appointed really brilliant staff that drives this, obviously. So roads are obviously one. I spoke about roads, so won't touch on that again. But I love the smell of asphalt. And
come on.
It's great. I love it.
That's a must.
You know, Maya smells the asphalt. He's like, where's the ribbon? Where's the ribbon? Yeah. Where are we cutting?
No, I don't like cutting ribbons. I did have, when we launched our road project, I did ring a bell. Here we're going. I didn't cut the ribbon. So roads is obviously one. Our wastewater treatment works was a big concern for us, because we were seeing that the aging infrastructure is taking its toll. So, and we can't afford to have sewage running on our beaches, running down the roads. It's just a no-go for tourism. And so we needed to intervene in that very, very urgently. So we spend a lot of money on upgrading our wastewater treatment works, and it's obviously still ongoing, but we spend a lot of money on pipe infrastructure as well as pump stations, as well as the actual plant. So that's really something that I'm focusing on. Thirdly was electricity, and our electricity plans are really going well, and luckily, again, being a small town, it's very easy to take an entire town sort of off the grid. And so what we're now busy doing is busy buying battery storage facilities, where we're going to store energy in, and then so that during peak hours we can use battery power, and then in that way reduce our own electricity bill. Which is much needed. And then we've got a big approved, for us, big 20 megawatt solar plant that we're busy building in Humanstorp, and quite a few other innovative ideas that we're doing in making sure that we become less reliant on Eskom, because it's just incredible how expensive electricity has become.
You're setting up Koga to be the green energy of South Africa.
Yes.
That's what it feels like.
We do have over 200 wind turbines, and it's in our area, and unfortunately, for some reason, the ANC, when they were still in government, had the opportunity to get energy from those wind turbines into our local grid, and they said, no, thank you.
Wow.
So all of that energy goes into the national grid. We get none of
it.
It is so sad. I don't know why they ever did it. We can't even buy, because they produce more than what they give to Eskom, what they sell to Eskom. So all that extra energy is just wasted. It goes nowhere.
Wow.
We can't buy it because they don't want to, because they've got a contract with Eskom, and it's all mess. But there is so much potential to build this green energy hub, and I really want to do that, because there's a lot of development coming, especially in Humanstorp. We've got an industrial park, a plant there, and some really big industries that wants to come in the value chain of the industries that's already there, the dairy and the fishing and all of the rest of it.
It's so exciting, because
of all the innovation that you just spoke about. You know, we often get used to older ideas and people don't want to implement new ideas. I mean, my goodness, you have a plastic road.
Yeah.
In Skoka.
I was about to bring this up if you didn't. It's such a curiosity.
What? Tell us about your plastic road. And is it still there?
It's still there without the bottle. Yeah, it was built about 7 years ago. It was a very big thing at the time, and then people lost interest in it completely, and now 7 years later all of a sudden it's become a thing again. People are talking, people are coming back, seeing what the state of it is now. And there's literally in 7 years not a single piece of maintenance done on that road, and it's still there. Perfect. It's still there. Not a single pothole. It's still wonderful. And it's just a short piece, about 200 meters section of road that we got for free. And it was a terrible state, and they rebuilt the road and put the plastic in it. But it's actually an interesting story. A Scottish company, they came to the provincial government, the Eastern Cape provincial government, and then pitched their plans. And they said no, because... The ANC said, what if people burn tires? The road's going to melt. And that's not how it works.
Forward thinking. Because they know there's going to be protests in their municipalities.
They said no. And then Vicky Knutse, one of our dear MPL, said, well, I know a place where you can pilot this. Yeah. And they then actually came to Koga. Sure. And built this road, and they put about a ton of plastic in per kilometer of road, and so it's and they replaced it with a bitumen, and it's very technical. They've got this product that binds it, and it just keeps water from penetrating the road, which obviously is like cancer to a road. You can't have water in there, so it keeps it out better, and then also it doesn't leach into the environment, so it's tested for leaching and all of that. So it's really cool to have the first plastic road in Africa, even though it's not very long. But the plan is to roll it out, obviously, everywhere. It's quite expensive, and we haven't rolled it out because of that, because this company also doesn't have a plant in South Africa. They're hoping that it will take off in other places. And I know that the Western Cape government is speaking to these guys now, because it's now been tested, and now they can see people from the city of Cape Town were there as well the other day. And now seeing this, so I know that they are back in South Africa wanting to open a plant here, and we'll definitely, once they're here, look into doing more roads like that. We do still have some maintenance to do on our roads.
Sure. That's interesting to
hear. That is very cool.
I thought for a second when you were saying plastic roads, I thought about a lot of Tupperware buckies that were melted.
Yeah. Where's my Tupperware?
It's like it's in the road.
the IDs won't be happy.
Yeah, they would. Exactly. I think it's such a Koga is such a special municipality. I mean, it's obviously the term Koga means land of abundance, and it is such a special story in terms of, you know, our country, because there's so much happening that we can be proud of. You know, I think some of the work that you're doing in terms of fighting crime is such a cool story. I mean, municipalities are known for not having the adequate powers to fight crime. And we have, I mean, there's currently a national debate around devolution of powers to municipalities. Talk to us about what you've been doing there to fight crimes in municipalities.
Yeah, that's actually one of the other things that we're focusing on. And again, we're not there yet with this, but we're making good progress. We just saw that crime of Nelson Mandela Bay is gang-ridden, and really things are going terrible there from a crime point of view. And we've seen a lot of that spill over into our municipality just next door. And we just couldn't just sit and wait for the police to do something. We've got some really amazing policemen, but they're so under-resourced and just don't have the capacity to do much. And so we had to make our own plans as well. And so we've tripled our safety and security budget over the last 2 years. Just because we've seen we cannot just sit by and say, it's not our function. We have to step in. So at least from a monitoring point of view, we've established a ICC incident command center where cameras are monitored, over 300 cameras are monitored. For cameras all over our towns, that's linked. Also, we've got a strong link and relationship with obviously with SAPS, with a lot of our private security companies, a lot of our neighborhood watches and community groupings and so on. So we've really it's a sort of a whole of society approach in terms of what we're doing from a safety and security point of view. And we have to take hands in doing this. We can't just wait for SAPS or for security or for somebody else to do it. It's us all. And we really learned a lot from Mossel Bay, actually. And we've got some good relationships with Dirk there. And the way that they are operating there, and obviously for them it was wonderful because they've got a Western Cape Western Cape government and a lot of support from the province went into their ICC, whereas for us we have to do everything ourselves, so it's going a bit slower, but we're getting there. It's going to actually go into a second round of piloting now. We've had a drone as a first responder, which for us is wonderful. I don't know if you probably haven't.
We have drones.
You probably have. I mean, as a first responder to see.
Oh, actually, I don't think
so when there's we've got an app that you can press a button and it goes off in the ICC, and then we send out a drone that can be flown from wherever the pilot is. It doesn't have to be on site. They fly then to wherever this panic came from. And they can see whether this person is in need of medical attention, if it's a police issue, if it's a fire issue, whatever the issue is. And we can dispatch a lot quicker, very specifically to whatever that need is. This drone can also fly specific routes, obviously, over critical infrastructure that's vandalized and so forth, and do routine monitoring that doesn't have to be done on foot through bushes by people or not done at all because it's just terrible terrain. You can now do it. So we've got a few. It's a company that we're now piloting it with. It's not implemented yet. We'll be hopefully going out on tender very soon. But it's really something cool that I think can have a big difference make a big difference in our municipality, safety and security wise.
It's incredibly innovative, but in some ways also frustrating. Just Naz was talking about the devolution debate. Everyone is having to pick up the slack for SAPS's failure, and they're not coming to the party in any sense of the word. Not with resources. You've now had to triple your budget. What does that mean in practice? Like, how much has your budget increased by in order to bridge these gaps?
Look, it's very small in terms of other places. For us, it's a lot because it's not something that... it isn't our core function. It's not supposed to be there. So it's money that can go to giving people electricity, giving people other services that we need to do that is actually our function. So it's money that's taken away from there. But we can't just sit back and say, but if we had a perfect SAPS, we wouldn't spend that much money because they would be doing their job. And now we have to spend, it's about 15 million rand that we're spending so a year. So it's small, small in terms of other municipalities. But for us, it's a lot of money. And
that I can imagine.
With 15 million rand, we can give electricity to a lot of houses.
Weaponized incompetence.
Absolutely.
That's a good term.
That's what it is.
It's malicious. Just malicious neglect.
Anyway. Something so important to keep people safe.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about the state of our country and how women live in fear every single day, it makes me so angry. And it's incredible to hear that you are stepping up where, you know, you shouldn't have to. But I want to ask you around what sort of work do you do with communities? Because you mentioned neighborhood watches. I imagine CPFs. How important is it to work with communities?
It's very important. It's very important. And again, back to what we first did in 2016 when we just took over, is to get people together. We've got an amazing community. People want to actually help. They want to actually make our area better. And we've really got, it's one of the things that I'm really proud of is the way that our people step up and say, I'll do this. I'll clean streets. We've got a guy cleaning our main street for free. It's just because he wants to. He loves it and he wants to make a difference. So he just sweeps the streets. He bought something that can do it. And it's wonderful. And so safety and security is the same way. We've got people that says, I want to, I'll pay for cameras. Let's put cameras here and here and here. It'll make the entrances of our towns better. We've got companies cleaning the entrances of towns. We've got an amazing community that really wants to and sees the value of us being a really proper functioning municipality, sees the value of that, and because it benefits them all then at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a very, I think, a very inspiring story, how a small municipality can use, you know, the community to actually get things done.
Yeah.
You just need leadership that, and sometimes political will, to actually say, let's bring them along. You know, let's bring communities want to help, they want to serve.
Yeah.
If they live in those communities, you know, they want to take action as well. I thought last night when I was just doing some research, what's the difference between the Zondo Commission and COGA? And I came up with this saying that, you know, the Zondo Commission, no one has been, actually convicted yet in a court. With COGA, your corrupt officials have actually been convicted this year.
Yeah.
I found that to be quite an interesting story. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, no.
That is a different. Very dad joking question.
It's okay.
It's fine. No, I mean, it's if you steal, you can't work in COGA.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as easy as that.
Yeah.
If you steal, you're gone. I mean, I always tell our top management team, hard on principles, but soft on people. So we have to be so hard on doing things right, getting things right, operating professionally, just doing the basics right. And if you don't do that, you can go.
Yeah.
But we are working with people, obviously, but you can't steal and work.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think a lot of the times, people think corruption is a faceless crime.
Mm.
But if you take a community like COGA, and I mean, there's one particular case, I think the guy's name was Eden Snyders or something like that, where he, you know, took a bribe of, I think, 48,000 rand during 2012 or something like that. And to a lot of people, that's okay. It's nothing. I mean, we hear of 10 billion, we hear of Lamborghinis, etc.
Yeah.
You know, but actually, it's not a faceless crime. It's money that could have gone to residents of COGA that, you know, would have aided in their dignity as well. And I think it's an important story to tell where, you know, where the DA governs, you know, we have a zero tolerance for corruption. Mm. And that's because it's not just the fact that we want to show people that we're taking action, but we also want to preserve the integrity of municipalities so that people can actually start paying more to the municipality in your rates and tariffs because they have the confidence that you'll be spending the money in the right place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the first positions we appointed and probably the best appointment we made of everybody when we just started was to appoint a really expert in terms of human resources and getting a manager that knows the law very, very well, that can knows how to get bad people out and good people in. And appointing good people is so, so critical. It is so critical. A colleague of mine, when we just got our first clean audit last year, it was really amazing to... we planned it only for this year, coming year, but it came early, which is wonderful. But anyway, so a colleague in Makanda and Grahamstown, ANC mayor, asked me at the meeting if how do we just what do we do?
Wow.
That's so different. And I said, it's easy. Just appoint the best people.
Absolutely.
That's what we do. We appoint people that are best for the job that they need to do.
Sure.
And you could see it's like, she's twitching or something.
What does that mean?
Because it's deployment, case of deployment is just so...
Can I tell you, I think you're going to regret praising that person.
Yeah.
Because our ministers are going to come knocking on that person's door.
Right?
You're about to lose them.
No. I know he's faithful. He'll stay.
So
I hope he's listening to this.
On the note of communities that Naz picked up, one of the things that is eternally agitating to me is the idea that the DA doesn't treat communities the same between your wealthier suburbs, your low-income communities. I will also go back to my ignorance about COGA. In terms of the makeup of the municipality, do you have townships or particularly poor areas?
Yeah.
Sort of what's the income distribution and how are you guys helping those communities?
Again, this is one of, and I might take a longer route to answer the question. One of the priorities is the upgrade of informal settlements. Because we do have informal settlements and we do have people that are extremely poor. We do get about 85% of our income comes from taxpayers. So we are in a good space as far as that's concerned. Only a small portion of our income is from grant funding, which is unique for the Eastern Cape. But so the informal settlement upgrade program that we have is we just need to give people dignity. We need to give people an opportunity to a better life. We have to do that. We can't just sit by and let people walk to standpipes and let people sit in a shack without it. It's just not right. It's just not right. So what we then did, we applied, because we've now got more capacity from a bulk infrastructure point of view, we're applying for money from our provincial government for this upgrade plan. So they eventually said, yes, they'll give us 68 million rand for this. I said, wonderful, thank you very much. We'll gladly take this. And then a few months later, they said we're getting an additional 83 million rand. Mm. So it's 140 odd million rand that we're getting for this, which is wonderful. Wow. So we appoint contractors. We're getting ready. Starting with work to do all of this. They have signed SLAs, service level agreements, one for 68, one for 83 million rand. As we start to claim this money from the province, they said, whoa, sorry, we made a mistake.
What?
You can't have this money. We can only have it over a six-year period.
No way.
I'm still fighting it. I'm going to a meeting with the Premier next week where I'm going to fight this. And it's just incredible that people's living conditions are now taken. I mean, I went to a community saying, we've received money. We've got signed agreements. We are going to put electricity into these houses. This is our plans, giving you layout plans, designs. Now I have to go back to the community and say, sorry. It's going to only... How do you develop infrastructure over a six-year period?
That's
you
insane.
Must build pipes and put infrastructure once.
You must fight it.
It's frustrating.
And a part of me wanted to say, let's meet them outside. I won't go that far. Premier of the Eastern Cape.
That gives you a good example of what it is like to be a DA government in an ANC province. It is just, we get zero support. They openly say in a meeting, Koga is not a friend of ours.
So is this malicious? Because they allowed you to go to a community and make promises and get people's hopes up. Or is it just, are they that incompetent?
I think it's both. I think it is a massive degree of incompetence. In this case, I think it's both, but it's definitely incompetence as well. But there is a lot of malicious things as well. That's just not right. We're one of the bigger and we're obviously the best run municipality in the Eastern Cape.
Yes.
But we get the least amount of grants out of all municipalities in our district and some of the least amount of grants in the province. And so there's a lot of malicious intent in what they do as well. And it's just because we're Koga, we're not...
Why are you going to fight it other than...
No,
my suggestion, which I say, let's not do my suggestion. But what are some of the recourses that you have? I mean, you made promises, they made promises. Yeah. What do you do now?
Yeah, so there's intergovernmental dispute options, there's court action, there's quite a few routes that we are considering. There is also, and where it becomes very sensitive, is there is the consideration that we are to some extent dependent on the province as well. And we want to keep relationships good, because if we fight them on every single front, then they say, why should we help you at all? If we can give you 10 million, just give them 2 million. Mm. And that maliciousness will just, is that a word? Maliciousness.
Yep.
We just made it if it isn't.
Okay. That will just increase and become more and more and more. So I'm trying to figure out where that line is between. But what is wrong is wrong, and what's right is right. And you cannot just say, give you 140 million rand. Here you go, wonderful. Please use it well. Sure. And then when you start spending this money, then they say, no, sorry.
It's just not right.
And they're literally taking the poorest of the poor money. And they always fight the DA. They don't care for the poorest of the poor. Where we now are actually doing this, and they're taking that money away from the poorest of the poor. So we are spending now our own money. We've electrified about 500 houses over the last few months. We've given electricity to informal settlements. That has never ever had electricity. It's one of my favorite things just be able to switch on electricity in shacks. And we've still got a long way to go, but we are making good progress as far as informal settlements is also concerned.
What you can do with that money that they've taken away makes me really angry.
It's true.
It really does.
So angry.
I think it's quite eye-opening to realize that, you know, here's a municipality that's trying to do their very best for indigenous clients, residents that are, you know, below the poverty line, that requires, that needs that service from the municipality. Mm-hmm. And then there's a big brother that is just, you know, arm wrestling constantly and playing petty politics with the lives and the needs of people.
It feels like they just want to keep people in poverty. That's what it feels. It feels like the ANC will sit on their high horse and say whatever, but they are the ones keeping people in poverty. And this is just one example
Out
of so many.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's, I've got one question that I think I've been wanting to ask a mayor of Koga, because my wife and I love to go to small dorpies during December. Yes. So, last night I was talking to her about Koga, and she was very fascinated about wanting to go there this December. So I said, we'll have to see. So, talk to us about some of the favorite places to visit in Koga.
Yeah, there's so many places. It's I feel. If our residents listen to me now, I'm going to be in trouble if I don't mention all our towns.
I was actually going to make it even tougher, because I was going to say, no, you have to pick one.
We're famous for surf, so go surf. it's really amazing. Over December, our population if you look at water usage and so forth, our population quadruples, increases by four during December period, which is in Jeffreys Bay and St. Francis has become more and more popular. Jeffreys Bay specifically is it's officially the third most popular town last year during December in the country, coastal town. I'm still saying it's second because Mossel Bay and Grootbrak is in the same municipality. They were one and two. And Jeffreys Bay was third on that list. And it's something I'm really proud about, because it really means that people are seeing, things are happening here. Let's go there. Let's go and enjoy holiday. People extending their holidays. We're seeing a much longer December holiday season now, where people used to come from the 16th, 17th of December and then leave 2nd or 3rd. We now see people coming in very early in December already and only leaving as late as possible in January. Yeah. So we're seeing increases of our summer holiday season, but also our winter holiday season, because winter season is surf season.
Okay.
And we're seeing that we've got a very big international surfing competition there every year, and we're seeing people coming longer before that and staying longer after that. So it's really wonderful for our tourism economy.
I mean, I was going to ask, what is the impact of those numbers on the tourism sector? Because, it's obviously employing quite a lot of people then.
Yes, it is. It is. It does help a lot in terms of tourism. And what we're now seeing is also people, again, like I said earlier, people come to Jeffreys Bay to come and surf, but they also now go to St. Francis to go and see the wonderful lifestyle there and play golf. They play golf.
Play golf.
And they go to the Bavians Kloof and going to 4x4 routes, and they go and see beautiful things there to do, and
gin tasting.
All of that, gin tasting and honey, and we've got export strawberry picking.
Awesome. Very cool.
And it's just extremely, there's so much to do there. It's really amazing.
That's so you are dodging my question. I do need you to give me those three places so that I can.
Three must-go places.
I'm in trouble. All
right. We've got wonderful restaurants. I'm not going to say one restaurant. We've got a wonderful restaurant, but you have to eat calamari because that's local. It's export quality calamari. They do export all over the world. You have to eat calamari. I'm not sure if you golf. Otherwise, you have to. Okay, no. Then I could have organized around a golf.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Play golf with you.
Yeah.
You have to go on a canal cruise in St. Francis.
Okay.
That's an amazing experience.
A canal sounds cool.
Canals in between the houses. It's really wonderful. People live on the canals. It's beautiful. That's really something you must do. And then take a drive through the Baviaans Kloof if you like off-roading or just a little bit off the beaten track. That's something that I think must do things. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Very, very sanitized list, but thank you, Mia.
That's very cool. I want to do all of those things.
You're going to have upset residents.
You might get even more tourists coming this December after that list. I want to know if you could go back and give advice to little Hatting, what would you tell him?
Yo, that's a deep question. I think I would. I'm a slow processor. I process things slowly, so I would like to. I'm also not a very patient guy, so I go with what I feel instinct and led to do very quickly. But I think in processing, I'm now personally just exploring some processing methods for myself to do in terms of how I think about life and how I think about what I'm busy with and everything that I am busy with. So I think that's definitely something. I think I would have kids earlier.
Okay.
I'm getting a little bit older now.
Okay.
But it's although I would have traveled more so far at this stage. I love traveling. I love seeing other places and cultures and learning from that and how we can just learn from that to enrich our own lives. Yeah, I think I would learn to surf a lot earlier.
Can you surf now?
I only started surfing late in my life, but I enjoy that. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question fully. It feels like I'm I think maybe it's just because I'm now on this processing.
No, we
trying to process where I go, because in my role as mayor, things happen so quickly, and I have to. It's moving the whole time. So I get very little time to sit and really process, okay, this is what I actually am learning, this is what I'm going through, this is what I'm what I should take out of this for me personally, how I can grow as a leader, as a husband, as a father. These are the things that I'm going through and process, really take that in and sit with it. And I haven't learned the skills early enough to really do that well. So I'm learning it now and I think it's so important to do that. It's so important to reflect. We grow in learning from what we're busy with.
That's
good
amazing.
And bad things. Obviously I think we learn from mistakes a lot more than we learn from successes. But it needs to be processed. And
that's
I think
amazing.
That's where I am at a personal level.
We got you. We felt you.
I love it.
Mr. Mayor, I think you have the absolute worst job. I cannot imagine dealing with constituents' complaints. That said, what do you like about your job? If you had to pick one thing that is your favorite part of the job, what would that be?
That's easy. I love that not one single day is the same.
Wow.
It is, every day is different. Every day has new challenges. Every day has different problems to solve, different people to see and to meet. I obviously love people. People give me energy. And so I love speaking to difficult people. I really love community meetings where people are angry and want to do things and resolve, want answers. And I like engaging with those people, and I like solving the problems. And so I really, that gives me a lot of energy, and all the every day's new challenges, new things to do is really something that gives me energy.
Let's keep this quick round going. I mean, I like this. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Okay.
Definitely. Correct.
I love coffee.
Books or podcasts?
Audiobooks.
Audiobook. Dad, join.
Can I meet you
all? Yes, you can. That's
okay.
I don't have time to sit and read a book.
What's your favorite song right now?
There's a song called Rushmere by Mumford & Son. It's stuck in my head.
Do you want to sing it first?
No. Not at all.
And Maya, I mean, we wanted to give you something special on the podcast today. So we got a few things made for you. You got to just quickly look through that. So those are three T-shirts. You can show it up. I don't know. Paul and the team will probably do something on camera. But that's
cool.
The first one.
Koha.
Yeah.
Koha.
That is amazing.
That's then, really cool.
We've got another one for you over here. And it says the mayor of the best
municipality in the game. I'm not wearing this.
You have to.
Can I sleep in this? Okay, I'll wear it at home so my wife can see.
Your wife knows.
And then the last one is for you on the campaign trail.
Absolutely.
So that
this.
You know when you do have a run out of the blue T-shirts, you can wear that one.
I'm definitely wearing this one. This is such a cool design.
That is
cool,
amazing.
Man. That is so cool.
I
love it.
I'm gonna make a lot of these. Can I make it?
I can send you the designs.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Okay.
I also brought some gifts.
Oh wow. Lucky us.
What do you think it could be? Cheese or honey?
It's a hat.
It is. I'm not sure if you wear hats.
Yes, you do.
I do. Okay. Yeah. So it is one of our local surf brands.
Oh, wow.
And so it's cool. Some real proper.
Thank you very much.
And just,
that is amazing.
I'm not sure who wants
this. Is the best guest that we've had on the podcast.
Ever. Everybody else who comes.
Yeah.
I'm just so
thank you very much. We've got some J-Bay hats. Jeffreys Bay Country Feeling, J-Bay and J-Bay. Yeah.
Love it.
Quite
awesome. Thank you so much for the gift set, for joining us on this podcast.
Thank you.
We have Hatting Borman, the mayor of the best municipality in the Eastern Cape, even though he doesn't want to wear the T-shirt. We know it's true. To everybody at home, make sure you like and share this broadcast. It's a really fun one. Everybody should watch it. Lots of information. Go to Koha in December holidays. Go surfing, go golfing. Look at the hollies and the mountains and everything beautiful. Thank you so much for being here today. We really loved it.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Good to have you.
Thanks, guys.